wanted a chance to make law. Well, here it is. Make it a good one.
Is this your gun?
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
We have your name on the registration.
No, you don't.
Don't be ridiculous. Networks don't get to decide elections. Courts do.
Your Honors, I'm not some slick big city lawyer like my opponent here.
What just happened? You kind of confessed. Sorry.
And I find you guilty. Bring out the wheel of punishment!
Welcome to Opening Arguments, a podcast that pairs a comedian with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 459. Hey, Biden's still president. How about that?
Woo!
Well, you know, we do record this a little early, so I guess I shouldn't be.
Yeah, right.
I hope he's still present.
There's going to be a super neat paper looking at the like underlying sociology of all these QAnon supporters, and I just can't wait to read that academic literature. Yeah. Right? Like we've all read the like, you know, the ways that like people who were a member of, who was the guy who was like, well, the world is definitely going to end on January 3rd, 2015.
Oh, there's 2012 was the big thing. I mean, that happens every, you know. That's every Christian cult leader every so many years. They all think the world is going to end any second.
Yeah, but there was the guy who like took out the billboards and was like, you know, convinced, had this like crazy numerological theory and was like, definitely like January 3rd, 2015. And then like on January 4th, he was like, no, oh, sorry, math error. Whoops. Definitely no later than October 2015.
Yeah.
And then October 2015 came and went and he was like, sorry, my bad. Harold Camping, that was the guy's name.
Oh, yeah. That name sounds very familiar.
And the people who like have had to like reconcile like with like what do I do when I have firmly believed in something and now like it's clear that like that's not the case. Well, and these like QAnon supporters.
Once again, apologies, but I talked about this on the last Serious Inquiries Only. I was curious. My whole curiosity.
Oh man!
And the point I made was, will they abandon Trump? Here's what I don't think. I'm not wasting a minute thinking they're going to change their minds and reform, you know, like, oh, it turns out I was full of crap the whole time. They don't do that. Cult believers don't do that. I mean, you know, in tiny numbers, they might. There may be a few of them who do. By and large, though, they always find a way to readjust their beliefs to conform to, you know, to whatever the new information is. So my curiosity was, will they keep Trump in that or not? Will it be, oh no, Trump is actually still president. He's secret president in Florida. Or will they throw, they're still going to believe the bullshit either way. But the point is, will it include Trump or not? That's something I'm not sure about. Will they go, well, it turns out Trump wasn't a true believer. He wasn't an actual, they got to him, you know, like the deep state, he's one of the lizard people now, you know, or something. So I'm curious if that's which direction it goes. I'm actually going to be tuned in to see.
I love SIO. Can't wait to go listen to that. I just think it's such an interesting question. And, you know, it's kind of right on the edge of, you know, what you and I have sort of identified as the like the biggest social issue of our time. Like, how do we reform a society with people who are disconnected from reality? I mean,
well,
did you see?
Yes, and you might say
on inauguration day there were protests outside Comet Ping Pong.
Yeah, look, the QAnon people. This is an interesting way to start the show, but it's it's a weird time we're in. the QAnon people, you might say, oh well, that's just a super crazy small subset, and it's not that small. There are QAnon believers in our Congress right now. But even if you want to say, okay, that, you know, not all Republicans are that level. It is true that basically a vast majority of Republicans are at least to the level of Joe Biden stole the election. That's a level of misinformation we're going to have to deal with forever. I mean, this doesn't solve, I don't know what solves that. Probably nothing. but like being, I think having power will do unbelievable amount of good. You know, like having Democrats be in control of some stuff will do a lot of good. I don't think it will solve that issue. I don't know what will. I'm not sure that, you know, that's a decades long problem now. And it seems to only get worse. So we'll see.
I'm with you. I just think it's worth us sort of calling it out whenever we can. So I know I didn't mean to derail us, but no, I'm definitely, as soon as we're done this record, I'm going to go check out SIO 275 because that's what I want to talk about, man.
I don't know if you listen to The Daily, but they played some interviews. It's a constant back and forth with the New York Times because on one hand, we're always mad, and rightfully so, that in the wake of Trump being elected, we're going to go interview some coal miners in a diner. It's always coal miners in a diner. Coal miners, you know, we got to hear from the heartland, America. And there's a very, very valid criticism that is, hey, it sure seems that your idea of heartland, true America, people you need to hear about every time is really white and has a certain, you know, like, turns out the working class is not white, really, actually, when you look at the numbers. Like, we should hear from people that don't fit into this like white coal miner archetype that you think is so important. But at the same time, given that the New York Times readership and the listenership to the podcast is already going to be super liberal, given the underlying factors we're talking about right now, which is the division in our media and all that, maybe it is valuable to keep an eye on those people because they interviewed a bunch of Republicans or Trumpers. I don't even know if they're going to be Republicans anymore. It might be Patriot Party people. We'll see. In the wake of the inauguration, and almost every single one of them said, this is theft. Like they weren't like, okay, well, I want to do an armed insurrection, you know, but they were like, well, I don't blame the people for doing the armed insurrection because the presidency was stolen. And that's like mainstream Republican belief.
It is, and I wish I had an answer because, you know, somebody posted in the opening arguments Facebook group a rant from their, like, you know, crazy Uncle Frank, right? And it was like, do you honestly think more people voted for Joe Biden than Donald Trump?
Yes.
I mean, like, literally, like, that's what it was.
They're so obsessed. It was just like the crowd sizes. Oh, the crowd size. They're so obsessed with that, Andrew. It drives me crazy. Yeah. You mean the group of people who recognizes there's a pandemic did not show up for Biden's inauguration? Wow, that must mean a conspiracy.
It's all part of the same seamless web of nonsense. I don't know. I despair.
Well, we need to get on to our show.
we definitely do.
Yeah, it is a problem we're going to have to keep an eye on this entire time, though. It is something to be aware of. The misinformation is not going anywhere. It really isn't. But
will not be coming out of the White House for the next 4 years.
They said that there's that headline that was like misinformation dropped on Twitter 70% when they blocked Trump, when they banned.
Just by banning
just
Trump.
Just one guy.
Yeah.
Yep. Unbelievable. So it does have an effect. But anyway, let's get to our episode. I don't even know what I'm playing for. There's no yodeling anymore. I'm all out of sorts. I have to make all new bumpers for stuff, Andrew. Let's see what I made for this.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear. This is America's day. This is democracy's day.
That you can let the science speak. It is somewhat of a liberating feeling.
We will be back in some form.
Will you shut up, man? Listen.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
This isn't happening. This isn't real.
No, it's happening, and I'm delighted to have you here.
Speaking of the person responsible for apparently 70% of the misinformation on all of Twitter, Donald Trump, Andrew, with his document fetish, went through every single pardon of the, how many was it?
143.
Yeah. Wow. So
no problem. I could do that. I could do that sitting on my head, staying on my head, right?
What kind of I'm expecting Bond villains. What did you find in there?
It's so much worse than you thought. But first I want to answer a couple threshold questions. And the two that I want to answer that we just see time and time again, we hinted at it last week. The first one is, but even our buddy Devin Stone, the Legal Eagle, made a like 50-second video on can pardons be revoked, right?
Yeah.
And the answer is no, pardons can't be revoked. And what people are looking to, there are two historical events that are incredibly oddball corner cases. I'm going to talk about both of them that have led to a pardon being rescinded, but they are an extension of this doctrine, right? And that is as follows. Joe Biden says, hey, I'm going to pardon Thomas Smith for all of his crimes against America. And starts writing it down, gets halfway through and is like, no, wait a minute. Clownhorn that guy. Mm-hmm. And stops writing the pardon, lifts it up, crumples up the pardon into a piece of paper and throws it in the trash can.
And I dig it out of the trash can.
Yeah. We all agree, right? Like, even if he's completely written the entire pardon and signed his name, right? At some point, like in the process, President Biden gets to say, yeah, you know what? I've had second thoughts about that, not giving that pardon to Thomas Smith after all. Okay. That is the principle upon which people are trying to extrapolate to say, is there some basis for overturning any of Trump's pardons? And I want to tell you, the answer is no.
Oh, definitely, and you should not want zero. It to be no. Imagine a world in which every time the presidency changed parties, a bunch of black people who were convicted of minor drug offenses would have to go check back into prison. You know, like imagine they'd be free and then, oh, great, a Republican was elected. All right, grab my things. Let's check back into prison. And then maybe a Democrat goes, oh, I'm out again for a little bit. That would be not a good course of events.
It would be crazy. Yeah. Right. So let's talk about the two cases that have actually happened. The first was Ulysses S. Grant is said to have revoked two pardons that were issued by Andrew Jackson. This comes from, and again, Ulysses S. Grant, right? This comes from a case in 1869. It does not come from a Supreme Court case in 1869. It comes from a Southern District of New York, the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York, trial court decision in 1869. That's it. And here's what happened. Jackson had issued the pardon to three different people. Two of them, the pardons were delivered to the warden at the prison where these prisoners were located and were still sitting on the warden's desk, had not yet been delivered to the actual person. The third, they had, right? And so the rule, this case is called In Re Dupuis, and it is 7 Federal Case 3814. And like I said, a trial court case from 1869, and it says a pardon becomes effective upon delivery to the recipient. Here, let me quote from the decision. The marshal was in this case no more than the messenger of the president. If the president can arrest the mission of the messenger when the messenger has departed but 10 feet from the door of the presidential mansion, he can arrest such mission at any time before the messenger delivers the pardon to the warden of the prison.
Sure.
And that's all that it stands for, right? So the question then becomes, in 2021, what would constitute delivery of a pardon?
Yeah.
Right? And I will tell you, publishing it on the internet, there are a billion cases, right? Yeah. You would not want to say, like, delivery doesn't count until it's in someone's hand, particularly in a COVID-19 pandemic in which we're trying not to put anything into anybody's hands, right? Like, it's crystal clear that saying you've issued a pardon would 100% constitute delivery in the 21st century.
Yeah. Well, it strikes me that all of this stems from the difficulty in working out the logistics of a very tiny, straightforward part of the Constitution, right? It just says the president has the right to pardon. I mean, there's not a lot of language, right? So it's trying to figure out, well, what exactly does that mean? Does it mean that once the president has written it down or something, you know, and that's, but it seems pretty obvious that one way or the other, while there might be some delay in the messenger reaching the person, it wouldn't be a good idea and it wouldn't make any sense to have future presidents be able to revoke old pardons going back however long.
Exactly right. That gets to the second of these cases, which is actually a recent case. I don't remember when this happened, but this was during George W. Bush's lame duck session. So December 23rd. I mean, you want to say lame duck, right? This is 2 days before Christmas. On December 23rd, 2008, George W. Bush went to pardon Isaac Toussie. T-O-U-S-S-I-E. He was a scumbag real estate developer who secured fraudulent mortgages in the 90s. And Bush in the lame duck was like, yeah, I'm going to give that guy a pardon. And if you want to think about the way in which the world has changed, despite this now being Christmas Eve, we learned Toosey's father had given $28,500 to the RNC and donated $2,300 to the McCain presidential campaign. And the political pressure was so great on George W. Bush in the lame duck session after having already lost, right? Yeah, well, it was a second term, but after the Republican Party already lost.
Third term.
Well, God. Obama's coming in. That Bush rescinded the pardon on the grounds that it was never delivered. Why was it never delivered? Because again, right? He announces it publicly on December 23rd, but you know, even George W. Bush isn't doing that much work, you know, the day before Christmas Eve, right? And so he hadn't written it down yet. He'd not effectively delivered it to Toosey. And because of the way in which pardons are presented, right? There was no litigation about this because there was no way to prove, right? Like, because Toosey was not in prison at the time. It would have made a really incredibly interesting case, right? And I could have seen a court saying, yeah, we depart from the rule of In re Dupuy, right? We decline to follow a 150-year-old district court decision from Southern District of New York, you know, in the 21st century. If Toosey had still been in prison, but... And this is a foreshadowing to so many of Trump's pardons. This was not about getting Toosey out of jail. This was, he was long since no longer in prison. The question was, could he hold a real estate license again and go back to swindling people, right? Because if you've got a full pardon, you're no longer a felon, right? And now you can go back to, we've talked about how... that denial of privileges based on the conviction go away once the pardon is issued. So put a pin in that one because the overwhelming plurality of Trump pardonees fall into that kind of Toosey category, right? They are white-collar scumbags who have long since been out of prison, but it's about, quote, clearing their names, end of quote. But yeah, so those are the two cases that people are throwing around when they say pardons can be revoked. And you see what crazy edge cases they are. And they are just a derivation of the principle of the president can change his mind, but not you can come in and undo what the previous president
did. Yeah, it's basically the difference between like, is the move done when you've stopped touching the chess piece or when you, you know, it's like just that argument.
Yeah, technically nothing ever touches anything, right? Because it's all the strong nuclear force.
Yeah,
so yeah.
Right, But nobody is saying it would be a good idea to undo a chess move from earlier in the game. Like that would mess up the whole thing.
Correct. Exactly right. That's your answer to question number one. Can pardons be reversed? They cannot.
All right. So next question, and this is one I've, I even teased on my last episode that you were going to answer this because I'm very curious. You had mentioned before that pardons could be, you know, like secret sort of, like he could have already pardoned himself and we wouldn't necessarily know. There's nothing in the rules that say a dog can't have a secret pardon. So what about all the people wondering right now, myself included, has Donald Trump secret pardoned himself, but it's still in his pocket? You know, he has like a get out of jail free, like an actual literal get out of jail free card that he, you know, wouldn't have publicized. It seems a little far-fetched, but not impossible. What say you?
Here's why I think it's impossible.
Oh,
okay. So first answer, and this is an application of the principle you summarized from the A segment, right? Which is the Constitution doesn't set down rules on pardons, right? So there certainly is no rule that says a pardon has to be published on the White House website. So when we say, could a pardon be secret? The answer to that in a limited sense is it could be secret in terms of not being broadcast to the public generally, right?
Okay.
But it could not be secret as between only the president and the pardonee. And the reason for that has to do with the Presidential Records Act, right? 44 U.S.C. section 2201, subsection 2, defines as presidential records any documentary materials relating to the political activities of the president or members of the president's staff, but only if such activities relate to or have a direct effect upon the carrying out of constitutional, statutory, or other official or ceremonial duties of the president, Right. And issuing a pardon is a constitutional official duty of the president. So every pardon becomes a presidential record. And then at 2203, 44 U.S.C. section 2203, the minute a president's term ends, then the archivist becomes in charge of all presidential records, right? So the president is directed to preserve, maintain and preserve presidential records during their term. And then upon the expiration of their term, the archivist gets custody of all of those presidential records. I mention this because now we talk about the secret pardon, and I want to talk to you about how that would play out in the real world. Remember that what you do is you present the pardon in a criminal indictment, exactly like the way Michael Flynn had Sidney Powell attach his pardon with the little seal on it and everything, certificate suitable for framing, as an exhibit to the pleading. So you say, I move to dismiss this case on the ground that the court no longer has personal jurisdiction over me, on the grounds that I have been pardoned in full for the offenses to which I would otherwise be subject. And then Judge Sullivan in the Michael Flynn case looks at it and is like, yep, this is an authentic pardon. It covers the offense for which or the offenses for which you are before me. So therefore, because it is an authentic and valid pardon, because it covers those offenses, I'm granting the motion to dismiss. But notice the role of the court in that, right? You might be tempted to sort of pause lightly on, we have to figure out if this is an authentic pardon or not. But you do, right? Like, obviously, a forged pardon is invalid. That works to no
benefit. Yeah, Lionel Hutz, this pardon is written on a cocktail napkin, and it still says no. says guilty.
So now, like, look, it's pretty easy to tell if I, Andrew Torres, have a forged pardon from Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But the court is going to impose extra scrutiny when it's Donald Trump Jr.
Donald Trump.
Or Donald Trump himself, right? Like, because they'll be like, well, Mr. President, with all due respect, how do we know you didn't write that yesterday? How do we know you wrote that pardon during your term of office? And the answer would be the Presidential Records Act that I just described, right?
So he can't just have taken a Polaroid at the with the day's paper. At the time, like last minute of January 20th, 11:50, a.m., saying and wrote he wrote himself a little note, Donald Trump, Donnie's secret pardon, and then he busts that photo out with the pardon at the time. That wouldn't work.
I am confident that that would not work because if I were the prosecutor, I would say now you have to adjudicate, is that photo, right? Has it been photoshopped? Has it been altered? Is it inauthentic? And as between, the archivist lost the record of this pardon, or come on, Mr. President, didn't you just make this photo up yourself, right? Like, I think a court would very highly err on the side of like, that this is in order to ascertain the validity of an official presidential action, there's got to be some record of that action having taken place. So I want to be clear. When you first asked me, is there the idea that there could be a secret pardon? Is that plausible? It's plausible in the sense that there is no affirmative obligation to broadcast your pardon to the world. But particularly as you get closer and closer to the presidency, to the president and his immediate family of friends and cronies, a court will be called upon to evaluate, is this a real pardon or not? And if you want to add on top of it, right, like I've expressed, I continue to have confidence in the idea that Trump cannot self-pardon, that Trump can self-pardon. But as we pointed out on the show, on the other side of that is Lawrence Tribe, who has forgotten more about constitutional law than I'll ever know. There's a valid argument that self-pardons are not legitimate anyway. And so now what you're saying is Donald Trump is going to have this like wadded up napkin in his pocket. And then when he gets indicted for federal offenses, is going to come into court, with a self-pardon on a napkin that no one knew about. Donald Trump may be dumb enough to do that, I guess. It's possible. But we know he extensively sought the advice of Pat Cipollone and other White House lawyers in his last weeks in office. And even Jay Sekulow, I think, would tap him on the shoulder and be like, that's not a great idea, Mr. President. So I think we can be relatively confident that neither Donald Trump nor any of his immediate family, friends, Jared Kushner, whatever that counts as, I think those pardons were not issued.
Well, that
I know
is really
everybody's afraid. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I genuinely expected proactive pardons with Rudy, not to mention a lot yep. awful Rudy,
yep.
you know, like what do you make of that? I mean, I know we're going to go through the actual pardons in the last segment here,
yeah.
but I'm actually really surprised at this, that he, you know, the pardoning himself thing was iffy. You know, I could see maybe not doing that, but like, why didn't he just pardon everybody on the way out just in case?
I think 100% speculation here. I think we owe Mitch McConnell on this one. I really do. The day
well,
before.
Why don't we put it on the tab where the other side of the ledger is everything else in the world?
Offset, the right of offset still applies, right? Yeah. Mitch McConnell is still expiating an infinite debt. Don't get me wrong on this. But I think when Mitch McConnell publicly said that the mob that engaged in the insurrection on January 6th was spurred on, was motivated by Donald Trump and other powerful people. Those words were very carefully chosen by Mitch McConnell to be able to either A, vote to convict in the Trump impeachment, or B, give himself some weasel way out, right? And the way in which Mitch McConnell will weasel out of that and not convict is, well, I said motivated by Trump and other popular people. By that, I mean, you know, Alex Jones and QAnon and OAN. And I'm convinced that the president sincerely believed these demented conspiracy theories. I think it's a terrible thing, but I'm not going to hold him responsible. I'm not going to convict on somebody who sincerely believed nonsense. That's how you back out of voting to convict Donald Trump if you're Mitch McConnell. And then I think Mitch McConnell or representatives called up Donald Trump and representatives and basically said, if you pardon yourself or your family, I'm voting to convict. Huh. That's my read. That's
why,
again,
why
100% speculation, but that's what I
still
think.
I get that it's speculation. I don't know that that's not it. And I don't, you know, but like but why? Why would he do that? Why would that matter so much to McConnell that I don't know. Something doesn't make sense to me.
Because I think you saw that the insurrection fractured the Republican Party and it made it impossible to defend the dance that they've been doing for the past 2 months. And I think McConnell said, yeah, this is now a bridge too far.
Yeah, but they don't need to defend it. You know, like Trump, from Trump's point of view, I don't understand. And also, not just, I'm not talking about just pardons based on the insurrection, pardons on all this stuff, on anything that Don Jr. Still be. It's just amazing to me. Maybe you're right, but maybe we'll find out someday. Or I don't know if there's any reporting on it yet, but I'm very curious why he didn't pardon anyone. And I guess that's one theory, but I think we should finally get to it, Andrew. Let's get to who he actually
who he
did
pardon. Okay. So 143 pardons and commutations, actual text in the show notes. Of those, half for the very first time, I mean, literally, not counting five or six cases, half are comprised of good pardons. Right. Mm. 70, right? 18 of those 70 are cases recommended by the pardon attorney.
I didn't know we still had one of those.
We do. Somebody that is literally Trump has not relied upon.
One of the most useless jobs. Yeah, it's a do-nothing job.
Yeah. And related to those 18 that came from the office of the pardon attorney that were recommended are 40 plus that are nonviolent drug offenders. So the kinds of pardons that we want to turn around and say, yeah, this is exactly what the power should be used for. Now, if you were cynical, as well you should be about Donald Trump, you can say, yeah, he threw it. And you can see where there are chunks of these in the big overall list that are included to like distract you so that, you know, you're not just reading down like, oh my gosh, this is like a who's who of monsters. So for example, it includes Sarita Stibe Martin. This is somebody who was convicted at the age of 19 and sentenced to 10 years in prison. Now, as a child, as a 19-year-old, was part of a gang that engaged in car theft and burned down an auto dealership to try to cover up their tracks, right? Like, so, like, bad crime. But after her release from prison, she became really a tireless advocate for criminal justice reform. And she not admitted to college, and so convinced Tulane to ban the box, essentially, right? To not ask the question of what's your criminal justice history in admitting new students, which, you know, is really, really crucial because if you're ever going to be reintegrated into society, like having access to education and employment are really keys to making sure you don't have to go back to crime, right? So this is somebody who, in a bipartisan way, like everybody agrees, made a real mistake, served 10 years in prison, right? Like that, you know, didn't get to get away with it scot-free, and then has spent the rest of her life doing good things. Scott Connor Crosby. Don't worry, there aren't too many of these, right? There are, in fact, But Scott Connor Crosby stole $7 when he was 20.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, throw the book at him.
Yeah, Ed had the book thrown at him. And again, he's been out. His state civil rights.
What was that,
rights,
like a third strike thing? Or?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yep. It's almost like the three strikes law was crap. And
right.
Never
yeah. That was overwhelmingly pushed in by Republicans. Yes, exactly. So he had his state civil rights restored in 2003 in Arizona. And then this restores his federal civil rights by expunging the conviction by getting a full pardon. Okay, so that's it. And again, I'm not going to go through. I will tell you, I stopped researching one by one anybody who was convicted of a nonviolent drug offense, right? I just assumed that was a good part.
So we'll give them 70 good ones.
70 good
ones. Okay, well, right. Cool.
Now, next category, we're moving from to more severity. So now we have one case and five criminal defendants of arguably defensible pardons to five white collar criminals. And these folks were executives of an HMO. They are Todd Farha, Thaddeus Baraday, William Kale, Paul Behrens, and Peter Clay. They were prosecuted for regulatory violations. And so if you want the pro-prosecutory side, it was they interpreted the regulations in a way that was self-serving and inflated the value of their company. And then later it was determined that that interpretation ran afoul of the law. If you want the pro-pardon side, they got a lawyer's advice. And the lawyer said, your interpretation is reasonable under the law. Self-serving, but it's reasonable. Now, unlike the people in category one, these five people, okay, one of them served 3 years imprisonment. Most of them got probation. And, you know, it's a white-collar criminal offense. But nevertheless, if you want the best argument, you could say, and these folks, pro-business institutes like the Cato Institute have been arguing for years that these folks should be pardoned. And I'll give you the link in the show notes. Let's say that that's right. Okay, let's say that they were profit maximizers, but they actually did solicit an attorney's advice that said that their interpretation of the regulation, while self-serving, is reasonable, shouldn't be criminal. Okay, we got rid of their convictions. That's five more. We're done with the good ones. The next category, and there are 36 of these people. And if you're a patron, by the way, you will get my entire 50-page notes. Patron at any level,
I have
50 pages of notes, individual by individual, for each one of these. So you can look up your favorite scumbag. And I want to tell you, all of these people fall into the category of these are hideous white collar criminal offenses, right? Mm. Defrauding people out of their money, crimes in connection with the collapse of the financial sector in 2008.
Surprised Bernie Madoff didn't get a pardon.
Right. These are Bernie Madoffs, right? And wow. I'm going to highlight a couple of them. And you need to know, and I want to tell you just how duplicitous the Trump administration is in describing these people. So they fit into the category of white-collar criminal defendants who already got sweetheart deals and small sentences. They're all already out, for the most part. They're all already out of prison. And the reason to pardon them is to expunge the felony conviction so that they can get back in and go back to defrauding people.
Fleece more people out of their money. Awesome. Yeah. Cool.
So let me give you an example. This is from the last guy on the list, but literally like almost all of them fit this category. There's a guy called Ed Henry. He's described by the Trump press release as, Mr. Henry was sentenced to 2 years probation for aiding and abetting the theft of government property and paid a $4,000 fine. And you look at that and you're like, oh, okay, right. So guy who had 2 years probation, and then it goes on to say he's shown super remorse and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay, well, he's not a serious criminal because he was only assigned 2 years probation, right? He never stepped foot in prison. Well, yeah, that's because white guys who fleece people out of their money get amazing sweetheart deals. Yeah. What he actually did was defrauded Medicare out of $200,000. Under the statute, he could have faced 10 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. So he got the tiny, tiny end of that already. And then, you know, now that's like, well, look, this is such a mild crime. Like, why not just pretend like he never crimed altogether? And it's just each one is more awful than the next, right? So we have Todd Boulanger, who was Jack Abramoff's right-hand man. We got Carl Andrew Boggs, who pled guilty to defrauding the South Carolina Department of Transportation from $88 million. Adriana Chiota, who counterfeited the 5-hour energy drink. I mean, seriously, she mislabeled.
Not only should that be a crime, just making the normal 5-hour should be a crime in Biden's America.
You betray the law!
Opening Arguments is brought to you by Paint Your Life. I love Paint Your Life. I talk about this every time. The painting that I have of Lydia and our beautiful daughter Phoebe on the beach. It's one of my favorite things that we have in our house. It will be on any wall wherever we live as long as we are alive. It is that beautiful and it's that meaningful. And if you have somebody, wife, grandparent, maybe your parents, if you have somebody you're shopping for the perfect birthday, wedding gift, anniversary gift, by the way, Valentine's Day gift coming up very soon, I highly recommend Paint Your Life. Here's how it works. You get a professional hand-painted portrait created from any photo at a truly affordable price. You choose from a team of world-class artists and work with them until every detail is perfect. The user-friendly platform lets you order a custom-made hand-painted portrait in less than 5 minutes. It's a quick and easy process, and you get that hand-painted portrait in about 3 weeks. You send them any picture or even combine photos to make the perfect painting. At paintyourlife.com, there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money is refunded, guaranteed. And right now, as a limited time offer, get 20% off your painting. That's right, 20% off and free shipping. To get this special offer, text the word OA to 64,000. That's OA to the number 64,000. Text OA to 64,000. Paint Your Life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. Terms apply, available at paintyourlife.com/terms. And one more time, text OA to 64,000.
A guy named Michael Liberty, who's been described as Trump with a Maine accent, who bilked investors out of $55 million.
Oh my God.
A guy named Michael Ashley, who was CEO of Lend America, which issued $1 billion in fraudulent loans, was convicted in 2019. And this is a commutation, so it may or may not implicate his restitution of $50 million that he still owes. Like I said, he may still have to pay that. It's not clear. Believe me, Mr. Ashley will be in court arguing that he does not have to. Kyle Kimoto, who had to pay $30 million in reparations for Asahi total burn and free money from the government schemes. I mean, these people, jeez. Chalana McFarland.
Is it just a list of Trump's personal heroes?
It is. These are folks who are, we can't directly draw a line to Trump. In some cases, we can draw a line to people close to Trump. And then it's Trump doing a political favor for people close to him, right? So Eliyahu Weinstein had a Ponzi scheme in which he was supposedly allowing investors to buy into an IPO for Facebook. He did not have the authority to purchase the IPO from Facebook. It was just a Ponzi scheme, right? Later investors paid off the first investors, and then eventually he absconded with $200 million. Bob Barr, Republican from California, supported, and Jeff Van Drew, Republican from New Jersey, supported pardoning this guy, commuting his sentence. And so they prevailed upon Donald Trump to do so. So each and every one of these 36 scumbags are people who are rich and powerful and politically connected, and any one of these would be a terrible, disastrous, you know, nightmare to try and defend. You know, Ken Ford, the coal executive who lied to federal safety inspectors, right? The former CEO of SunWest who laundered $130 million, right? David Tamman, guy who was on two separate occasions convicted for obstruction of justice for investigation into his $22 million Ponzi scheme. Faustino Bernadette, who got 15 months in prison for the largest Medicare kickback scheme in American history, which swindled the government out of $900 million. It's just over and over again. And again, you know, I haven't even gotten into the former politicos. So, you know, Republicans like Duke Cunningham, but weirdly, like super corrupt Democrats like Kwame Kilpatrick, the former mayor of Detroit. Again, just Google Kwame Kilpatrick, like read his Wikipedia entry. That commutation was supported by, and I'm not making this up, Diamond and Silk. So, you know, it's just like these are politically well-connected scumbags. We're not at the worst yet.
Okay, I have a question. I will hold it for after the worst.
No, it's
better after you're done.
Then we have 21 that fall into the category of obviously repaying political favors.
I can't wait till we get to the supervillain category. He's falling into the category of like assemble the Avengers because this person is on the loose.
Yep. So Kenneth Kersen, who was the editor-in-chief of Jared Kushner's newspaper, the New York Observer. Wonder why he gets a full pardon. Why does Tommaso Buti, who settled $15 million worth of lawsuits for $350,000, why does he get a full pardon for his financial crimes? Because he started a modeling agency with Donald Trump that brought in Melania Trump. How about Elliot Broidy? You know who Elliot Broidy is. Steve Bannon, you know who Steve Bannon is. These are people who directly did a favor for Donald Trump and are now getting paid back.
Turns out drain the swamp meant let all the swamp creatures out of prison. I guess the swamp was prison, and now he's draining it of all the bad people who should be in there.
Exactly. And some of them are truly inexplicable, like the favor that Trump did for Lindsey Graham. So Lindsey Graham went to him and lobbied for a full pardon for a guy named David Rowland. Okay. Not the former head of Equitas of the London market. I had to look that up. I was like, oh my gosh, David Rowland committed a crime. No. This was a guy who was an asbestos remediator. His license expired. And then He took money from an elementary school anyway, even though he was no longer licensed to remove asbestos, right? That could have killed children. But, you know, Lindsey Graham wants him to be pardoned, so there you go. He gets pardoned. What about the doctor who's bribed a county administrator to get a government contract? Served no time in prison, got 3 years supervised release, but now, by getting a full pardon, he can get his Medicare license restored. So I think I'll leave with this last one here. Hillel Heli Namad, who was a gambler. He was an art dealer, right? And he opened up an illegal gambling ring.
Oh.
Again, sweetheart deal. Served 1 year and 1 day, which, as we've talked about, is better than serving a year because you get good time credits if it's over a year, right? Was sentenced to a year and a day, got out in like 7 or 8 months. And you might say, well, why would we want this, you know, illegal gambler to have a full pardon? Oh, because he owns an entire floor at Trump Towers.
So that was the one I saw something that was like Phil Mickelson denies he had anything to do with the gambler.
Exactly. Yeah. That is exactly right. It's the art dealer that used his sports connections to run the illegal gambling ring. There were three rappers. I don't begin to understand Trump's fascination with rappers, but Kodak Black, Lil Wayne, and Michael Harris, who has a nickname, but I forgot to write it down. He was the founder of Death Row Records, right? So yeah. I guess Trump's a big fan of West Coast rappers. So there you go.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. It's all just somebody speaking in his ear, I'm guessing. Whether it's Diamond and Silk or Pamela Anderson was involved. I saw a Fox News interview with Pamela Anderson about pardons. It's weird.
This leaves, and this is how I want to kind of bring this segment to an end, because there are 8 people that I do not understand how they got pardoned. I mean, they're kind of connected in some way to some semi-famous people in a few cases, but it's weird, and I just don't get it.
Yeah, I can't figure out most of these, but okay. Extra can't figure out these 8 people.
So, all right. First is Casey Urlacher. And if you're going, last name sounds familiar. Yes, yeah. He is the brother Brian of Bears great Brian Urlacher. Right?
That's funny.
Again, ran an illegal gambling ring. Spent 7 years as a Republican mayor of a small town in Illinois, right? Brian Urlacher visited the White House in March of 2020, but it just seems weird, right? It's like, okay, maybe he did a favor for Brian Urlacher.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that's what it is.
Okay. How about this one? Jamie Davidson. Jamie Davidson in 1983 was convicted and sentenced to life imprisonment for shooting an undercover cop, right? He was a drug kingpin. Wow. He gave the gun to a subordinate and was told him to shoot a cop in the head during a botched robbery. Unlike a lot of the other ones, right? Like, it's not like, oh, nonviolent drug offender. I mean, this is a cop killer and drug kingpin. I can't figure it out.
That's all you have? There's nothing else there?
That's all I can find.
So just a cop murderer.
Yeah.
Wow.
As people have said, there have been intimations that pardons may have been for sale, right?
Yeah.
These are the ones that maybe fall into that category of, do I think a drug kingpin might have some money lying around? Yeah, he could. James E. Johnson Jr., who beat a guy with a metal folding chair and then was pled guilty to charges related to migratory birds, end of quote.
Well, we know he was Trump's friends with Vince McMahon or whatever.
So, maybe.
Just anyone who committed a folding chair related crime, like wrestling angle. Yeah.
Glenn Moss. So Glenn Moss, was part of a criminal healthcare overbilling scheme. He claimed $2,000 in income when he earned $500,000 in income. So, you know, I almost moved him to the scumbag category. But, you know, that's a minor league scumbag, right? Like, relative
to what else is going on here.
Yeah, relative to everybody else. So I have no idea there. How about this one? And again, this is, it makes sense in that other, like, prominent scumbags like this guy. So maybe it makes sense. But Anthony Lewandowski, no relation to Corey Lewandowski. This was the guy who worked at Google in the self-driving cars division, all their stuff, and then, you know, brought them to the company that would become Uber. The pardon notes that his sentencing judge called him a brilliant, groundbreaking engineer that our country needs, end of quote. Why the ex-Google self-driving car guy? I don't know. Kind of weird. I'm going to skip over the name here because it's really was hard to find the information on a guy who was another drug trafficker, right? Like not just a simple possession, but somebody who was serving a 40-year prison sentence for trafficking in, you know, way more, right? Cocaine. It just seemed weird. This one was super hard to Google, Lou Hobbs, because, you know, not that Lou Hobbs.
Lou Dobbs?
not Lou Dobbs. Yeah. This guy seems to be a Brooklyn drug dealer and a friend of Mike Tyson. But I don't know that Mike Tyson is friends with Donald Trump.
It wouldn't surprise me, though.
Wouldn't surprise me. It's kind of weird. How about I leave you with the biggest question mark then? This is number 8 of 8. A guy named Robert Zangrillo. He was sentenced in the Varsity Blues scheme to pay folks to take standardized tests on behalf of celebrities' kids. And that's it, right? He's just, right? He's not a guy that anyone has ever really heard of. Right?
I just imagine Trump has no attention span. He's trying to golf/be depressed about losing because he's a loser. And he probably just was like, yeah, whatever. Okay, fine, add it. Yeah, sure. Sure. Or, you know, like I imagine there wasn't that much process to this. So who knows?
It just seems weird because, you know, the Varsity Blues investigation, that's the one that brought down Lori Loughlin from Full House and, you know, a couple of other kind of C-list actors. That was a Trump DOJ achievement, right?
Like, yeah.
It
just seems like somebody in his circle or him is friends with somebody. That's what I would guess about this.
Yeah.
Or this leads to the question, we're running out of time, but the question I want to ask is, we know that, again, he hasn't pardoned himself or anybody else. Can we pursue, is there going to be any sort of investigation? Can we look into kickbacks, bribes, what went into these pardons and, you know, what level of evidence would we need for there to be a crime there?
Yeah, that's a great question. This falls under the federal bribery statute, right? Those allegations would fall. Let me be clear. They would be allegations, right? And that's 18 U.S.C. 201, right? Remember, we've talked about this. This is the McDonnell case, right? And where the Supreme Court really narrowed Bob McDonnell was demonstrating that he had not engaged in, quote, an official act. Right. Like there was no question that Bob McDonnell and his wife got like the, you know, use of the Ferrari and fur coats and, you know, literal bags full of money. But their defense at the Supreme Court that ruled 9-0 and overturned the conviction was all McDonnell did was provide entree. Right. Like introduce these people around and say like, hey, you should listen to Thomas Smith over here. He's got a good idea about a bill that would be useful here. The official act would be the issuance of the pardon, right? Right. So the idea that because it's an official act, like you're immune from any prosecution, like no, it's the opposite, right? Like that's what helps establish the thing that you're not allowed to do, and that is at the core, right? Like when the federal bribery statutes were passed, right? Like the core of that was, we do not want to have the quid pro quo, right? We do not want to have, you know, somebody come in, bag full of money, hand it to a legislator and say, okay, so you're going to vote yes on the bill tomorrow, right? This is no different, right? They're both official acts, things that you're right. A legislator, could you imagine a legislator saying, well, yeah, I took their money, but like voting on legislation is a power that I have as a legislator. Yeah.
Well, that was essentially Dingus McGee's argument, you know, your Harvard professor, wasn't it? I mean,
oh, yeah.
What an idiot. What a terrible lawyer. Or perhaps he had reasons to try to defend horrible people.
Yeah. But no pardon for Alan Dershowitz in this.
Yeah, wow.
Which surprised me quite a bit. So yes, 100% investigations, even if Trump had pardoned himself, you would still be able to investigate any ongoing conspiracy, right? Like, unless he was paid in full for issuing the pardon and then wrote a pardon, pardoning himself for fraudulently being bribed to issue pardon, right? Like, it would have had to have been at that level of specificity. Or again, he could have issued a generic pardon for all offenses in being, you know, as of 11:59 a.m. on January 20th, 2021. I remain surprised that we didn't see that. And that's why, you know, kind of to come full circle, that's where my McConnell supposition comes from. But I think we'll find out. But the important part is, yeah, unleash the dogs of war at the DOJ.
Yeah, is anybody looking into this? Are they? I mean, there's so many things to do. I just hope somebody is looking into this and figuring out what, if anything illegal was done here.
We do not know, because those proceedings would be secret until a grand jury returns an indictment. I would be shocked if people are not looking into it.
And that might be a way. It's not just to get Trump. Wouldn't we maybe be able to get these people back in prison where they belong?
Yeah.
So, wow, what a disaster. Hey, that's the last thing Trump did that we have to cover as news. You know, we can cover stuff, you know, historically, but I think we covered it. That's the last bit of Trump presidential news, right?
Yeah.
Eminent domain, here we come. So that's the end of the pardon stuff. We'll keep an eye on, we'll keep an eye on any news related to investigations on that. But that sounds corrupt as F, and I hope there are consequences.
Me too.
These are horrible. Trump is not the law and order president. I wish facts mattered in the world, because this is just absolutely atrocious. But we'll have to leave it there for now.
And thank you.
And now it's time for thanking our Hall of Famers, our all-time greats, over at patreon.com/law. And your turn to go first, Andrew.
The only thing I love better than going first is going second. So thank you to Tell Morgan, G-Tom's son.
I don't know,
but I'm glad we have friends of, you know, fans of Morgan. She's great. The Smiths Patreon account. Are we grammatically correct now? Biden borked the streak, October 23rd, 1987. Jake Moss, Richard Scott, all Adderall the President's men. Jacob Daniel Murphy, Daniel Lennon, former Federal Reserve attorney. Sorry, pause this list while I blow a kiss to my co-host. Sure. But let me first say, you are 100% correct when you say Sparkle Donkey is the world's best tequila in the world. Avril Parks, rest in peace, Brandon Bernard. We must abolish the death penalty. I agree with that. Next week on Lot Awful Movies is Fracture 2007. Yeah, that is on the short list of Lot Awful Movies. Noctelfa Root Creeper, The Coterie Business Solutions with Salesforce. Find us at www.thecoterie.io. Justice for Beer. Check out Budget Botanist on Fiverr for all your virtual houseplant needs. Listening for years, still can't come up with something clever. Nevin Dudez's Cow, Wesley Glenn Brock, Chelsea Olsen, becoming a patron to get 5 episodes a week, and I finally caught up on months of backlog. Well, we're going to still get good stuff out to you, so. New book, The Greatest Gift of All, A Logical Path from Religion to Humanism by Mark McLean, out December 30th. That means now. So order now. I just want to find 11,780 bar answers. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I like my pork streaks paired with at Casa Agria and at Emperor's Brewery beer. Check out Bradford Dallas on OnlyFans.com for the most risque legal briefs you've ever seen in a men's hockey locker room. All right. GD Tree says 50 kilograms of potatoes is 1,764 ounces, 110 pounds, 7.87 stones, roughly 111.6 cups of coffee, or 1,298.7 Twinkies. All right.
Yeah, but how many potatoes is it?
Yeah, 110 pounds of potatoes.
Yeah. How many? You put it in terms of coffee or Twinkies. How many potatoes would that be? Is what I get. Anyway.
That'd probably be what, about like 300 potatoes? Three to 400 potatoes? Yeah.
So as long as I drive around with 298 potatoes, I'm fine. Okay.
Thomas Kleberg, Big Docket Energy. Writ of Mandalorian is granted when there is no discretion. This is the way. The GOP is a domestic terrorist organization. No quarter should be given to them. Ocarina of Time is still my favorite Legend of Zelda game. I got to say, I love that you were playing the OG Legend of Zelda game. It's so good. Lee Sharp, Buddy freaking Geyerson. One is first, but two is a close second. Idea for a screenplay, Air Bud, man's best amicus. Hadron, who knew a butt could be clenched for 4 years straight? Yeah, and I think we're all kind of just feeling that relaxation right now. It's so good. I'm happy to see Biden inaugurated, but in 2024, I'll cast my two fabulous votes, one primary and one general, to elect two fabulous lesbians who got a puppy. Edgy Veggie, Bob Newhouse, Sassy Italy Tourist thinks OA must record a show from the balcony overlooking our favorite Piedmont vineyard when this is all over. Wow.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. Believe me, we're in. Greg Kreimer, Spring Bruce Steen, Jennifer Chakowski, A Republic If You Can Keep It, Hans Royal, Mike Hall, an old, mad, blind, despised, and dying king. That Dickens, always with the compliments. Say it with me, Amicus. Simple Country Hyper Chicken. I'm not even a tortfeasor and I'm kicking your ass. So you're saying the dotard is going down in Georgia. Angry Macface. Sorry, Andrew. Uncle Frank is too far gone. Amanda Gorman for President 2036. Penelope is ranting about Terpsichore's cryptography. And I know you're trying to get me to say it properly, but I'm still calling her Terpsichore. Sorry. The Books That Burn podcast, reviewing fictional depictions of trauma since 2019. It's a lot of work coming up with clever patron names. This group is really impressive. Yes, they are. Justice in the life and conduct of the state is only possible as it first resides in the heart and souls of the citizens. If everyone listened at speed 1.3, they might understand long legal explanations without exceeding their attention span. Motion for Andrew to do an explainer episode or series on the Federalist Papers. That's a hell of an idea. I love that. Uzi Rudy's Legal Ruse movie was a doozy. Crazy Corgi, Murray Gregerson, changed my Patreon name so that I don't jump every time you read it. Beyond Meet the Streak. I move for a bad court thingy. The Yodeler has exited the solar system. Next stop, Alpha Centauri. Big Dog Run. In Washington, we pronounce Washington, D.C. D.C., yeah. In Illinois, we pronounce it sedition. There you go. I became a patron because this is the best podcast ever. Yeah, thank you for that non-specific endorsement. We love it. Thomas Smith, Porker at Law, Brent Medling, Jake, donate to Georgia Runoff or Right Said Fred will come back. Yeah, time for a new one. Christopher Brown, Philly Live Show 2022. I'll bring the scotch and cheesesteaks. Yeah, I will bring the appetite. Exceeding the speed limit is breaking the law. Stop breaking the law, assholes. Lawfulcopter says, Andrew and Thomas, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for everything you guys do. The wheels of justice turn faster than the speed I change my Patreon name. Hello, my name is Porky McPorkingtonshire. I'm so porked they won't even play my I'm terrible at everything music anymore. There's a goat. Why is there a goat? By the time this is read, By the time this is read, Biden will be president and Trump will be out on his ass. Yes, indeed. Zirkel and Odin the Law Dog. Thomas, take it away.
All right. Thank you to Robert M., Stormy Decisis, Josh Hoku, Polly Hernandez. Check out Ring Runner and Brigador on Steam, two slightly mad indie labors of love that do not deserve their obscurity. Hey, everybody, we're all going to get laid. The CEO of Antifa joined our leadership call this Sunday. Yeah, more on that on the Lot Off of Movies. Emily Rainbow Spence, I'm just going to take a moment here to pause and really let it sink in. Former President Trump. Ah, okay. Well, I think based on that statute that Andrew talked about the other day, not even former president is what I say. Jason, after we impeach and convict him. Jason Copus. Hotspear suggests Biden pardon a nonviolent drug offender every day until Republicans agree to limit president's pardoning power. GiveToModestNeeds.org. GiveToModestNeeds.org. Not that, Chris Wallace. Two fabulous thespians. Nice. Whatever happened to Michael Avenatti? Proud supporter of Antifa LLC and Maryland Limited Liability Corporation. Don't make me a liar. Congrats to the USA. Now let's never do that again. Do we still have a democracy? Asking for a friend. Nate Drex, optimism is overrated. Darth Mandy Pants, Marshall, the law talking guy. Next week's reading of the Meese Report is brought to you by Antifa LLC, a literal leftist company. Oh, nice. 13th century Saxony gravel truck lawyer. Alfred Wallace, I am the bad things that happen in Philadelphia. Stay gritty. Diogenes the Cynic was right. Jennifer Kratch, a string of fabulous lesbians, each more fabulous than the last, Unionized Brooklyn Friends, the criming crimers and the crimes they crimed, sedate the seditionists. CivilPoliticsRadio.com, Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Valley View Radio. Good job on the voting for Joe Biden. Please continue with the hand-washing. John Bilderbeck, Stephen Balticaday Sandoval, two lot-awful Rudies is textbook IIED. My lawyer, Sidney Powell, will be reaching out shortly. Philip Kaiser, Andrea the Arbitrary and Capricious, you tell me the definition of a sandwich and I'll tell you if it's a crunch wrap is a sandwich. Sonic and Knuckles, can we all at least unite behind calling the guy in furs and horns Q-Baca? Absion, <Nice. laughs> Payne's Trumpet, Trambolus, let me be slightly more explicit because I like being slightly more explicit. Jonathan, the hare sued for tortoise interference. Trump wanted four seasons, got Doubletree. Can we charge the Trumpers with capital T treason yet? Motion to add Stan Ding as a party. Stop. Ask a question a karaoke legend would ask. Milo Meansong Esquire, halfling bard and attorney at law. Join your labor union. Together we bargain, alone we beg. Antifa LLC, a wholly owned subsidiary of BLM Industries. Convict Trump, James K. Pulling my support, but first suggest new crunch wraps. The Supreme is too left test. What? Sorry, I don't know. Chad T. Anonymous. Till all are one. Therese Chan. WordOrigins.org. Your source for legal terms from 13th century Saxony. Notus. Latin known. Notire. Middle English. Okay. R.I.P. Notorious R.B.G. Ba weep grena weep nini bong. Okay. Jobu's rum your Yodel Mountain Fantasy Football League champions. Yep. They said I could be anything, so I became two fabulous lesbians. Derek, Trump pardoned three turkeys this week. Congrats, Corn Cob and Michael Flynn. Oh, you're so far behind. Just barely outrunning being pecked to death by lame ducks. A string of unpronounceable characters. RondaTheDork.com. AG is my favorite Andrew co-host. Thomas is a close second. Hurtful. Malaika Chandler, tricicular manslaughter. Adam Costa, Soggy Pants, Jay Aldenwalt. Buttercup's Legal Services, actual legal advice from an actual cat. Matthew Vernon, Georgia runoff elections, Optimus Prime tested, Negatron approved. Sakashite Fukusumi is still migrating my DB schema for presence.impeached from boolean to integer, I guess, bool to int. Adopt a homeless pet and oppose declawing and ear docking. De jure belli et pacis at last, baby. Heather L, Jeremiah's Fancy Microwave Emporium, Ian and Ali, Dan Irizarry, Eli Bosnick, David in Brooklyn, Monster Bait, to Gomes, with a great Sirius NES reference there. Sam Danow, Mitchell, No Commute, So Behind on Podcasts, Marjorie Taylor Greene is the Matt Gaetz of Louis Gohmert's, Natasha Crunchwrap wants you to support Justice Policy Institute, I agree with that 100%, Sam Buck, and Conrad Michaels, still champion after all these years.
Woo-hoo.
Thank you, top patrons, you're the best.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
No kidding.
All right, Andrew, it's time for T3BE, hoping I didn't pork the streak. I've always been against streak porking. You know that. Everybody knows that. This one, yeah. I have no confidence in this one. How did I do?
I'm gonna cut to the chase.
Already doesn't sound good.
Yeah, no, it's not good. You lost. Here's why, right? So this was a question, and again, you applied a lot of good principles to the question, but I'm gonna sort of tell you where you went astray. So the lawsuit is a federal statutory claim, and the question is, do we admit as evidence a statement that is covered as physician-patient, covered by physician-patient privilege under state law, and indeterminate if federal law applies. So the first question is, does state or federal law apply? And then the second half of the question is, under the appropriate standard, does that law recognize a privilege for physician-patient? And right out of the box, federal law applies when you're in court on a federal statute, right? So the first sentence was, woman sued a man for physical damages based on a federal statutory claim. And you talked about how federal courts will apply state law. That is absolutely true. But the main reason in which that occurs is that you often the overwhelming majority of federal court cases are diversity cases, right? So are cases where citizen of state A sues citizen of state B, and you're in federal court, but you're in federal court for state law claims. And so the federal court applies the substantive law of that state in diversity cases, but not in federal statutory cases. Then you just apply federal law.
Makes sense.
So state common law does not apply. Federal law does apply.
Now I'm hoping the answer was D, so there was no chance I'd get it. If it was B, I should have gotten it.
And in fact, it was D, right? Federal law does not recognize physician-patient privilege.
Why in the world is that?
because it's a thing that lawyers have to memorize when they're prepping for the bar.
This is impossible. I will grant that I could have at least gotten to B. But there, how would I have known that federal law doesn't protect physician-patient privilege?
The way you could test prep your way into that would be to say, they've specifically told us that state A recognizes all the privileges of common law, but they haven't told us what the federal government recognizes.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything in this test, Andrew.
No, for real.
Like that could go either way.
It could. Look, I'm doing my best to defend the bar. I should not. It's an unfair question.
It's not defending the bar. I mean, I don't blame the bar for requiring people be lawyers to or have legal knowledge to pass it. This is just further evidence that you have porked the test, and this test is impossible. There's no way I could have gotten this. End of T3B.
there we go. But let us pass the torch to a new generation of T3BE questions.
Yeah, I'm 2 for 8 in this new test.
Yeah, it's not a great number so far.
You would notice that's roughly random.
That is random chance. Yeah, that is. So.
So that's what we're looking at in this day and age with this test. It's impossible. It's all the hardest questions I could possibly have. So if that's what the bar is, then I can't do it.
The bar is not all just the hardest questions, and I agree this was a tough one, and this was not one that I think you could reason to from kind of common sense. You really would have had to have thought about the kind of double Xanatos gambit that half the time doesn't pay off anyway. But
there's no rhyme or reason to why federal law wouldn't recognize physician patient privilege, is there? Like what?
No.
What?
I mean, just again, because, it's not a 13th century Saxony thing, right? If you start thinking about the additional privileges that have subsequently developed, like the core, and now here I'll illustrate my own.
Well, no, but it says state A recognizes all of the privileges recognized at common law.
Yeah.
So that would suggest that the physician privilege is one of those at common law.
Yep. But it's not a federal law privilege. And I can give you no justification for that whatsoever.
All right. Well, this was impossible. Let's see who's an actual lawyer who somehow guessed this one right. Who's the big winner?
Well, Thomas, once again, nobody on Twitter managed to get this question correct. And as always, we look to our patrons over at patreon.com/law, whenever that happens. And we had a lively discussion about whether HIPAA was going to come into play here. It doesn't. That's unrelated. So the winner is going to be patron Biden Borked the Streak, October 23rd, 1987, who says, I'm going to guess that HIPAA only protects in due course. I think when a federal lawsuit is filed, the HIPAA protection goes away due to the discovery process. D, federal law, reject the privilege, should have sued in state court. Absolutely correct. And congratulations on being this week's winner.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening. And we're looking forward to eminent domain sometime in the future. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
I move for a bad court thingy.
You mean a mistrial?
Yeah, that's why you're the judge and I'm the law talking guy.
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it would be a big help if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/yodelmountain and follow us on Twitter at openargs. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. It is produced with the assistance of transcriptionist Heather Loveridge, production assistant Ashley Smith, and additional contributions from Morgan Stringer and Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our live shows and heads up the OA Wiki. Follow at OA Wiki on Twitter. Additional thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian Ziegenhagen, and Teresa. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith, who edits the show and created the fabulous theme music, which was used with permission.